Streetside fortune-telling shops offer a tiny glimpse into the fairly secret world of Romani immigrants in the United States. The Roma, who first came to the U.S. in big numbers about a century ago, started fortune-telling as their main way of making a living, divvying up customers by carving out territories across the country. Now, a lot of people, by the way, still call them gypsies, but Roma consider that a not-so-nice term, and they're pretty protective of their business turf. When they have disputes, they have their whole internal tribal system to settle matters. But lately, some Rama have decided to start arguing the American way in court. The most famous recent example is a battle that broke out between two fortune-telling families in Southern California over who could open up a storefront where. The move to litigation has some Rama worried because they say airing their disagreements in the U.S. court will wind up eating away at the core of Romani culture. Professor Ian Hancock is himself Romani. He's an expert on Romani language and culture at the University of Texas at Austin. He also represents Rama at the UN Economic and Social Council. Hi, Professor.
Good morning.
Will you help me understand a little more about Rama? What's the ethnic background of most Rama?
Well, all of us descend from a population that left India about 1,000 years ago and subsequently spread out all over the world. And there are about 1 million of us in North America.
And why did the Romani people begin coming to the States about a century ago?
Well, when our ancestors arrived in Europe, probably in the 13th century, a good many of them became slaves pretty quickly in the area that today is Romania. And that slavery lasted until about 1864. And after abolition, those who were able left as soon as they could, and a good many of them came across the Atlantic about that time.
Now, many of the Romani immigrants who settled in the U.S., I'm curious about this fortune-telling. Is it really a way to make a living, or is this some stereotype that people just believe?
Well, it's partly stereotype, because not all Romani populations do it by any means. But it certainly has its roots in Asia, where it has a very different social status than it does in the West. It was brought out of India. And for centuries, the laws that kept Roma on the move meant that the means of livelihood had to be of a type that you could take with you if you were forced to move. And fortune-telling doesn't require a permanent base or heavy equipment or anything. And also, it offered a measure of protection, because if people associated you with some sort of magical powers, real or not, then they would be more inclined to treat you more leniently.
All right, so now we have a background on the people. We have a background on what they do and why they do it. So let's talk about this particular case. You have these two families going after each other because one family opened a storefront on the other's turf. Restraining orders have been issued a generation ago. How would a dispute like this been handled in Romani culture?
Well, we still have in place an internal legal system. It's called a quis. And traditionally, this is where such disputes would be settled. A panel of judges would be brought in from all over the country. The fewer local people, the better, so there'd be no personal involvement. And a decision would be arrived at, and it would be abided by. But in recent years, people have started to go to outside attorneys, and it's seen as undermining the traditional structure of Romani life.
How has the Romani structure of life remained so isolated in the United States so far?
Well, one of the strongest factors in keeping the barriers in place rests in the legacy from India, the Hindu idea of pollution and purity, and having to maintain a kind of spiritual cleanliness. And going outside the culture exposes you to all kinds of dangers that can lead to your being if you become spiritually polluted, which is called marimé, then you will be shunned by your own people and can't go into the non-Ramani world very successfully. And it's a pretty bad punishment and a very effective one, the social exclusion, something like the Amish have.
Hmm.
But it, as I say, it's weakening and it's causing some concern.
We're talking to Professor Ian Hancock. He's an expert on Romani language and culture from the University of Texas at Austin. Professor, next Tuesday, the heads of various Romani communities around the country are meeting in New Jersey to discuss a lot of these issues that we've just talked about. What do you hope is accomplished?
Well, we want to get the culture back on track and get people to be more traditional, I guess, which means taking everything much more seriously and abiding by the decisions of the Kris and perhaps codifying it. You know, we don't have a written tradition, well, not until the last century anyway, so there's no book of rules. But we're thinking that perhaps there should be something like that, that's unchanging and fixed.
And finally, before I let you go, just so people at home understand, can you explain why the term gypsies is not considered to be the nicest thing to call someone who's Romani?
Well, there's two reasons. One is that it comes from the word Egyptian, and that's simply a false understanding of our origins. But second of all, it's a loaded term. If you look it up in the dictionary, it's not a very flattering description, which really comes from the Hollywood stereotype rather than from the real population. And we don't, when we speak English, we say gypsy. But it's not what we call ourselves in our own language, and we need to re-educate about the real population and try and get away from Esmeralda and Carmen.
Professor Hancock, thanks for your time today.
You're welcome.